I'm about to address the subject of male and female psychology. I'm going to give this session also the second topic, as I love to do, as follows. Getting along with men, - getting along with women. How many of you here have occasion in your various relationships, family, business, job, and so on, to need to get along with men? I would say everybody needs to get along with men and needs to know how to get along with men. You see, that's important. And I'm going to be talking about that. I'm going to be talking to you women in particular about getting along with your husbands and your sons and what to do and what not to do. And some of you have been doing it. All right. How many of you in your various relationships in life, whether family, business, or on the job, have occasion to need to know how to get along with women, females? Well, I think that is the case with everyone. There are a lot of men in this world, and they tell me there are even more women. And it is very important to know how to relate to people in their roles as men and women. Of course, we are going to address male and female according to physical gender as well as esoterically. So I'm going to begin with some basic mind science definitions of man and woman. There is the male and the female in every mind. Write that down. You've heard me say that many times, and I need to say it again and again because it is like the carpenter using his ruler and his square continually. I say this because there are those people who are intellectually inclined, and they may wonder, well, why does he say the same thing over and over again? How many of you have ever watched a carpenter? He uses his ruler or his measuring device not just once, does he? But again and again. And the same with the square and other basic instruments of carpentry. So we need to constantly touch bases with our basic definition. There is the male and the female in every mind. Add something else to it, regardless of physical gender. Esta es muy, muy importante. Very important to know this. Male and female are two aspects of mind. Now, let me define man from a point of mind science. Man is the objective, reasoning, intellectual side or aspect of mind. And mind science teaches us how to deal with the male and female aspects of mind. So, in dealing with male and female psychology, we are going to deal with male and female psychology from the physical gender point of view, as well as from the point of view that the male and female psychological aspects are present in every mind. I want to repeat again, the statement, man is the objective, reasoning, intellectual side of mind. Now, the Bible tells us in Genesis that when God created woman, he caused a deep sleep to come upon Adam, and that he took a rib from Adam's side, out of which he made woman. This is the mystic's way of telling us that woman is the subjective side of man, a mind. Man and woman, male and female, are two sides, are two aspects of the same thing. Now, having those basic ground rules, I'm going to address myself to some of the characteristics of male and female from the physical gender point of view, getting right into what it is that you have to appeal to in the male to get along with him, and what it is you have to appeal to the female to get along with her, and give you some do's and don'ts. First, with the man. Here it is. And don't ever forget it, because what I'm going to tell you in the next few minutes will revolutionize your relationship with men and women. Here's the man. A man loves power. A man loves power. Shout that. The second time, a man loves power. The third time, a man loves power. Okay, some of you may be saying, well, Reverend Ike, what's that got to do with the way that I relate to men? Plenty. Women, first of all, if there is a man in your life, whether it be husband, whether it be your boss or a man that you've never met before that you've got to deal with in a bureaucratic situation, never do anything that he would interpret as a threat to his power. I'm not only saying this to women. Some of you men may say, well, that's for the women only when they're dealing with a man who is in a certain position. No, it goes for everybody. Now, and the male may not always be consciously conscious of why it is that he resists a particular person that he has to deal with. And it may be because on the subconscious level, you are posing a threat to his power. Don't approach a man in a way that threatens or questions his power. Another word for power also that I want you to use is authority. Always give power to a man. Always ascribe power to a man. And there are ways in which you can give power, ascribe power and authority to a man, and at the same time, girls, get him to do exactly what you want. Oh, hurry and tell me that. Now, you see, this is the way to deal with a man. I should charge everybody an extra $1,000 right now for what I'm about to tell you. See, there is a way to do everything. Now, I want to repeat this again, because some of you have been going at it all wrong. Even if a man is wrong, do not threaten his power or authority. If you're dealing with a man, the first thing that you do is to acknowledge, recognize his power, his authority. Make it a point to do that. For thine is the kingdom and the power. Even God goes for that. That's the way the Lord's prayer ends. But you go into some man's office and you walk up to your boss, or you have a certain relationship with your boss where you are threatening his power, you are threatening his authority. You are asking for trouble. You are going to have a relationship of conflict. But I repeat again, you can give a man power, authority, and honor, and yet get him to do exactly what you want him to do. Okay. I'm going to be repeating some of the techniques for getting along with men and women. I'm going to show you how to do this. I kept telling you about the medical student that had really had a rough time in and out of medical school. And so he called me up and told me that he just could not get through the bureaucracy. One term, when he returned to medical school, he couldn't get through the bureaucracy. He had to just pack up, turn around, and go back home. And it looked as if the same thing was going to happen the next term. And this is when he called me from the campus. And I taught him some techniques of how to get along with women first, because those were the first bureaucrats he had to deal with. And then men. So since I've started with men, I'm going to show you what he did. Well, one of the problems he had after he got through to the women using my techniques, he had no housing on the campus, you know, because he had been wrestling with the bureaucracy, late finally getting his admission slip, everything going wrong and looking impossible. And so by the time that he got everything else straightened out, housing was not available. Anyway, he called up the housing officer, who happened to be a man. And here is what he did, and here is what happened. Well, first of all, the man repeated to him the same bureaucratic broken record. No housing is available. All of the housing in the rooms had been assigned. This young man, medical student, said to him, and here's the key, where he empowered the man, appealed to his love for power. He said, well, I know that there is no housing available, that everything has been taken. However, I knew that if there was anybody who could find me space to live, that you are the one who could do it. The conversation stopped dead in its tracks. What had he done? He had appealed to the male love of power. Authority, also another word to add to that, ability. Every man that you deal with, women and men, make them believe that you believe that they can. This is the great woman. Make them believe that you believe that they have the power, the authority, and the ability. And you see, this puts a man's power on the line. And you see, this is many times why people in general, and women in particular, may have problems with men, because they come into conflict with that male love and sense of power. See, I see some of you thinking, I said, oh God, I know where I have been going wrong. When you go to work tomorrow morning, your boss is going to wonder what has happened to you. When he told the housing office of the mail, yes, I know that everything, all of the housing has been filled. There are no more vacancies. But I knew that if anybody could find me a place, you couldn't do it. Guess what happened? Yes, all the dormitories were filled, but this housing officer gave this single male student. Not space in the dormitory, but an entire apartment on campus. Why? Because he honored his power, his authority, his ability, and I want to repeat again, even God goes for that. Thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. You see, in the older days, before the days of women's liberation, women and even wives and female members of the family and all members of the family referred to the man as my lord. The British still do that. We don't use that term of address here in America, but it would be good if you acted like that, if you conveyed that attitude. But remember all the time that once you convey that attitude of power, authority, and ability and lordship to the man, then you can get him to do what you want him to do. Don't forget that. You see, but some women are just too damn stubborn to understand that. And not only women, but men too. Remember, if you've got to deal with another man. For a moment, for contrast, because I'm going to constantly go back and forth between the male and the female, here is a little cliche which I coined this morning. Give a man the power and a woman the flower. What did I say? Give a man the power and a woman the flower. Now this ties into what I'm calling the dominant characteristics of a woman. We said that a man loves power. Now here it is for a woman. A woman loves to be admired and remembered. Write that down, and we're going to say this three times. Together, a woman loves to be admired and remembered. The second time, a woman loves to be admired and remembered. All right, we're going to repeat it the third time because you are constantly dealing with men and women. You see, you can use this on the bus driver. And there are men and women driving the bus, you know. You see, in every, what did I say also? That there's the man and the woman in every mind. So you see, whatever there is in any person of any physical gender that loves to be admired, that is one of the feminine qualities of mind. But in persons of the physical gender, of female in particular, there is that standout quality of loving to be admired and remembered. So let's repeat again. A woman loves to be admired and remembered. Now, so that we don't forget, what is the dominant quality of the male or the man? Let's repeat that. A man loves power. And don't forget the other words. Authority. Ability. Let me say this again and again and again and again. Every man that you have to deal with, men and women, the first thing that you do in your approach to a man is to acknowledge thine is the kingdom and the power. I mean, even if you don't believe it yourself, you make them believe you believe it. And I'm going to show you how that works. As a matter of fact, I'm going to jump around a little bit and show you how this works. In the sixth chapter of Judges, there's a man named Gideon, an Israelite. And Israel at this particular time, meaning God's people, the people who know the law are the people who ought to know the law. If you read, you'll find out they forgot it a lot of times. And that was the situation in the sixth chapter of Judges. God's people had forgotten the law. You see, that's always the problem anyway. Every problem comes from the fact that you have forgotten the law of the Lord. And they had begun to serve other gods and built altars to other gods. What does this mean? Believing in other causes beside the one cause, which is mind, thought with a capital T. They began to worship material phenomena, believing that they cause what happens to me. Believing that that over there is the cause, when the Lord or the law has instructed us, thou shalt have no other God, no other cause, no other power beside me. So they were beset by enemies. You see, this is what happened. Opposition can never overcome a man or a mind or a person until he forgets the law. When you forget the one law, that as a man thinks, so is he, then enemies or opposition can prevail against you, but not until then. As long as you know, as the unity people love to say, there is but one power and one presence, God the good, omnipotent. As long as you remember that, then there are no other powers to oppose you or to bedevil you. And so while Israel were in this state of forgetfulness and being assailed by enemies, Gideon was called upon to lead God's people back to victory, back to God, back to the truth. He was called upon to help God's people overcome their opposition. But he had an inferiority complex. He had a negative self-image at that point. He had forgotten the power within himself, the power of thought, the power of mind. But something interesting that ties into this lesson happens in the sixth chapter of Judges and the 12th verse. Listen to it. It's exactly what I've been telling you, and I'm going to have you repeat it after me as I shall read it. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto Gideon.
And the angel of the Lord appeared unto Gideon.
And said unto him, the Lord is with thee. Thou mighty man of valor.
Thou mighty man of valor.
Wow. You see, the angels know how to talk. Can you imagine that? Here is a man that is scared out of his britches. He is trembling in his boots. He is scratching all of his hair out. Fearing the Amorites and the Amalekites and the Midianites and the Negroites. You've heard of... Who are those three Hebrew boys? Shadrach, Meshach, and a bad Negro. Here was this man, Gideon, just trembling and shaking in his boots, afraid that his enemies were going to pounce upon him and do him in at any moment. And some angel shows up and calls him a mighty man of valor. So you see, some of you women that have weak men in your lives, you know what to do. Whether they be sons or nephews or husbands. But have you been talking angel talk? The angel called him a mighty man of valor. What do you call him? We couldn't repeat it in this august assembly. What do you call your sons? What do you call your husband? What do you call the men in your life? This teaches us something also very mystic. A man will be whatever the woman calls him. We're going to become more mystic and more esoteric than that. Listen to this. It also means that you, any person, will be whatever you subconsciously call yourself. Are you catching this? Even while you are shaking and trembling in your boots and don't have the slightest idea what to do, as scared as you can be, if you will subjectify the consciousness of might and strength and valor and knowledge and intelligence, and call yourself by that name, by that nature, subjectively, within yourself, you will become whatever you subjectively say you are. This happened also in the case of the healing of the woman with the issue of blood. There was an afflicted subconscious state, but then she said of Jesus, of the indwelling Christ, when she heard of the works of the Christ, the Bible says, she said within herself, if I may but touch the hem of his garment, I shall be made whole. You see, everything that happens to you according to what you call yourself, subconsciously. And this is the woman, the subconscious. So I can say to any person, regardless of your physical gender, what is your woman calling you? Are you following me?
Yes.
Write it down. What is my woman calling me? You see, and what you have to do, you have to learn how to make your woman call you what you want to be. Put God's words in that girl's mouth. As I said before, in the olden days and in some societies unto this day, the man is addressed as my Lord. And he believes that and begins to act like my Lord. And begins to provide for you like your Lord. If he's not providing, maybe it's because you're not calling him my Lord. It works both ways. Both have to do their part. Now, let's look quickly at the 14th verse of the 6th chapter of Judges for a moment for some more insight into this from Gideon. And the Lord looked upon him and said, go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianite. Have not I sent thee? I want to be redundant about this, because I don't want you to let this slip. What do I subconsciously call myself? Say that. What do I subconsciously call myself? What do I subconsciously call myself? That's the woman in the psychology. Has nothing to do at that level with your physical gender. The man, the woman, the male, the female, the husband, the wife are in every mind. And all of your subconscious action is styled as the woman. There are exceptions, as I told you before. This is why perhaps I'll do a separate course in, what do I call it? Esoteric hermeneutics. There are exceptions, and I don't want to get off into too much of that. But Isaac, the blind father, was representative of the subconscious in that case. A person of the male gender was used to represent the subconscious. The blindness represented it also. You see, because the subconscious is blind. You can be shaking in your boots. The subconscious is blind to that. You just call yourself a mighty man of valor. And that subconscious will say, oh, yeah. How many of you have ever been in the military? Let's see your hands, all you veterans. I don't know where these other folks have been. Well, we had reveille early in the morning while the dew was still on the roses. We were up before the sun up in basic training in the Air Force. And so when we would fall out for reveille, there would be thousands of guys in our squadron and all over the base for that matter. Bunch of sleepy guys. that's fallen outside in the pre-dawn darkness. But all of a sudden, from headquarters, the order would be given. Base! That's the preparatory command. It means this word is addressed to everybody on this installation, and it comes from the base commander. And so everybody listens then. That gets the attention of the ear. The ear begins to listen for the command of execution. The command is in two parts, the preparatory command and the command of execution. This is why sometimes I'll tell you to stand up, because to your subconscious, this is a preparatory command. The subconscious then knows that something important is to follow. And then the command of execution comes. Base, ten, hut, which is attention in military dialect. The amazing thing, the preparatory command, the command of execution is passed down the line from one unit to the next. You hear the command repeated, and you hear heels clicking together in the pre-dawn darkness. And a bunch of sleepy men that rushed out of the barracks, clothes half on, half off, suddenly they become a mighty army of disciplined soldiers because the command was given. And whatever you call yourself is the command to yourself to be who and what you say you are. And when you give that command, yourself will come to attention and execute the command according to your word. How did I get into that? Oh, I know how I got into that. Because of what the angel, the word of the Lord, said to Gideon. Notice that the angel didn't come to Gideon and say, "You sissified, scaredy cat, you!" Like some women may say to their men, "You no good for nothing, man, you! Why don't you get out of here and get a job? You trifling excuse for a man!" No, but what is it? The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Valor indicates fearlessness. Oh, man, Gideon was ready. So, in the end, he led the Lord's people to victory over all opposition. A man loves power. And you notice how that power was given to him. So you see what you have to do? You have to empower. You see, the male represents also the objective side of yourself, the external side of yourself. Man represents mind, and man also represents manifestation. And this is how you make your manifestation what you want it to be, by calling it what you want it to be. Speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. Give a man the power and a woman the flower. All right, I'm going to get back into some more examples of the woman, the same medical student. Before he got to the man, he didn't even need housing until he got processed into medical school. And there were two women in the bureaucracy. One was Dr. So-and-so. And her secretary. Dr. So-and-so was pretty nice, but she had this secretary whose job it was to keep all of the students and the people who came to annoy Dr. So-and-so and to get favors from Dr. So-and-so away from Dr. So-and-so. You know, that's part of the role of a secretary in many cases, to see to it that the boss is not disturbed. And so he told me about Dr. So-and-so and about that secretary. While he was telling me about Dr. So-and-so, he let it slip. I'll call her by her initial, Dr. J. That Dr. J had just been promoted. When he said that, I knew I had it. I said, she just got promoted. I tell you what you do. I said, when you hang up this telephone, you go straight to the florist. If you only have money for one rose, get one rose and a card. and write a nice little note on it congratulating Dr. J for her promotion. Now, well, what am I going to do? How am I going to get past this secretary? That's easy. First of all, don't go first off asking her for anything. Now, here's a rule for winning friends and influencing people in general. Find a way to massage the ego of people first before asking them for anything. That goes for man or woman. What did I say? Find a way to massage the ego of a person first before you ask for anything. It's the same as spiritual priority. Do some of you go walking into somebody's office? They never saw you before. They don't know you from Adam's house cat. And you go in there with an attitude. So, this is what I told him. No big deal getting past that secretary. First of all, you're not going there to ask her to get in to see Dr. J, or to ask her to ask Dr. J for anything. You've been doing that already and got nowhere. This time, instead of going there looking to get something, you're going to give something. First, make me a little cake first and bring it to me in thine hand. First, then after, make the bee and thy son. Give first, and then you can get what you want. So I said, now, stop and think about the secretary. Put yourself in her place for a moment. All day long, she is bombarded with people that want a favor from her. So her mentality is literally that she's standing in front of her boss's door with a gun pointed. Mentally positioned, you're not getting in here. Subconsciously as well as consciously, all day long, she's saying, no, 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 get out of here, get out of here. That's the role that she has to play. But when you come from a different direction, she is not prepared to defend that position. So the first thing you do is walk in with a smile, with a rose. Say something nice to her about herself. What could I say nice about that woman? Jokingly, I told him. I said, you could say to her, you are a wonderful SOB. I said, but no, don't say that. But I said, even if you said that, I guarantee you she would only hear wonderful. By the time you got wonderful out of your mouth, she would have such a smile. Her defenses would have dropped. She wouldn't hear the SOB. Find something nice to say about her. He said, okay. So when we hung up, he called me the following week and told me that he completely disarmed that secretary. She had never had anybody coming into that office not asking for anything, not wanting anything, and saying something nice about her, and not wanting to get in to see her boss or trying to get something for her boss, but leaving a rose. Well, she wasn't prepared for that. And he happened to see Dr. J on campus a day or so after, and she reacted just like the typical woman to that flower. Let me tell you again, people, give the man the power and the woman the flower. And it usually doesn't matter what position she's in, how high she is in her profession, she reacts like a woman. There may be some hard-nosed liberationist. There are exceptions, you know, as they say, exceptions prove the rule. And lo and behold, he got processed into medical school so fast. Well, by the next week when he called me, he'd been processed into medical school and had his own apartment. Oh, yes. I told him also, one other thing I told him when he went to get to those flowers. I says, go to the florist and get those flowers. One rose if you only have a little money. And get the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
by Dale Carnegie, and The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. So he got those. And when he called me the next week, he says, you know, this is working so well. He said, I've been working it on another woman. He said, there's a lady doctor that's in charge of a student program whereby a student gets an internship to work in the laboratory. And I want that internship. So I went over to see her. And I used the stuff you told me about on her. I said, guess what? I got the internship. Now, what does this internship mean? Now, listen to this. First of all, this was an out-of-state student, so he had to pay the highest rate. Medical school? Wow, that's a lot of money. When he got that internship, that made him, became an employee of the university, and gave him citizenship in the state so that his tuition was cut in half. He got the state residence tuition. Isn't that something? Not only that, he became an employee of the university, and now he's getting paid to go to school. Not only that, another little nicety he got, his own parking space. I talked to him a week ago Saturday, he called. And he's doing so well now until they want to hire him through the summer. It's all because he came to understand male and female psychology. I gave him the rule that I gave you a moment ago, and I want to give it to you again because it's so important. I told him, says, everywhere you go around that university campus, don't wait until you need a favor. Make friends with everybody. And not only the people that are in high places, but even with the clerks in the office. He was talking about this the other day. I told him about my experience in the Air Force. Sometimes the little clerks, you know, like in the Air Force, a little basic clerk could drop your pay record behind the file cabinet. Intentionally. And you have had it. So now don't go jerking around the little people. See, that's another thing. That's why you have to learn how to respect everybody. I'll give you a statement that my mother often said to me, and I'll have you write it and repeat it after me. It is better to have the goodwill of a dog. Don't you forget that. So as you go through life, don't think that, well, there are people who are, you know, they're nothing, they're not important. You get your pay record dropped behind the file cabinet. See, those people who pick up papers and shuffle them around, they can put your paper on top or under the bottom. And it happens all the time. Mr. Big Shot, when I was in the Air Force, I was with the chaplain service, and on a base, one of the stations that everybody processed into and out of was the chaplain's office, and it didn't matter who it was, whether it was the commanding general or the lowest airman basic. I was in charge of the religious preference cards, which they filled out when they processed through our office. Then I had the commanding general's card, and everybody else's card. And I made it my business as people came through that office to make friends with everybody from the commanding general down. After I'd been in the Air Force 2 years, I decided I wanted to get out. They didn't want to let me out, but I was so good and so nice and used so much stuff on them that they let me out even though they didn't want to let me out. Even had the commanding general as an usher in chapel one Sunday. See what I tell you? If you know how to treat a man, you can get him to do what you want. Imagine the commanding general. I looked at his religious preference card one day, and there's a space on it. He was a good Episcopalian, and there was a space on the religious preference card where you indicated what kind of work you'd like to do in the chapel, and he had indicated ushering. I don't know whether he did that intentionally or unintentionally. So there was a boy from Chicago who was in charge of the ushers. And so I called him. I said, hey, Marvin, come here. I says, look what the general has on his card. He says, he's interested in ushering in the chapel. He says, what? I'll call him up. So he got on the phone. The chaplain's office is calling. You see, that's another thing. You learn how to use certain things. Nobody's going to turn down a call from the chaplain's office. Nobody said who it was, you know, that it was the head usher, you know. It was an usher at the chaplain's office calling the commanding general. Never gotten through it. So what the hell do you think you are calling them, commanding general? It's the chaplain's office calling. Sure. He got the general on right away. He said, general, this is so-and-so-and-so at the chaplain's office, and I see that you've checked on your card. that you're interested in ushering. The general said, sure, when do you want me? So he assigned him to a particular Sunday. On that particular Sunday, the general comes to the office, walks in, clicks his heels together, and salutes the sergeant like he was a private. I remember the division commander, General Sanborn. One commanding general reporting for duty, sir. What did I tell you? If you know how to deal with a man, you can get him to do what you want him to do. See, so in every case, when the general was called, the call went through properly. He was addressed properly and honored properly in his office, and he responded. You can imagine the surprise of the troops when they came to chapel that morning. Here's the general standing at the door with the stars on his shoulder, escorting privates to their seats. I've been to the Crystal Cathedral several times. Once I went and stayed in the parking lot so that I could see what goes on out there. You know, you have to go and borrow vessels. And I was so impressed to see the ushers out there in the parking lot taking up the offering. And they all look like bankers. And I just know that there are a lot of bankers out there volunteering as ushers. But here again, if you know how to appeal to a man's sense of power, you can get him to do what you want him to do. Let's repeat the cliche again. Give a man the
power.
And give the woman the flower. Give a man the power and the woman the flower. I said a woman loves to be admired and remembered. Let's start with the admired here for a moment. Every woman that you have to deal with, give her the impression that you admire her. Even that heifer that you can't stand. Even the wicked witch. Let me hear everybody say admiration.
Admiration.
If you walk up to a clerk at the post office that you've never seen before and wish you never will see again, give the impression of admiration. Women, however, have to be careful, because this is one of their strengths as well as one of their weaknesses. And those of us men who know this could misuse it. I'll tell you something else about this business of a woman loving admiration. A woman will fall for admiration even if she knows it's a lie. A few of you are clapping because you have done it. So those of you who are females, of the physical gender females, this is something that you have to keep in balance. My mother was pretty good at watching things like that. She had a statement she would use every once in a while. She would say, that's too thin. What does that mean? I can see through that. So women, all of the men that approach you, look right through them. Look right through them. And of course, you see, this is another thing that a woman has. And of course, this quality is in every mind. Intuition. Intuition is a feminine quality, so-called. But every mind has it, because there is the female in every mind. Are you following me in all my twists and turns? So women of the female gender and woman of the mind, you must develop your spiritual intuition. That helps you to look right through things, to look right through people. And that way you'll save yourself a lot of heartache. Remember in the story, the great woman said to her husband, I perceive that this is a holy man of God. You see, you must have the kind of perception and intuition that can discriminate between the holy man of God and the gigolo. I want to say this again. To the feminine quality of every mind, that feminine quality of spiritual intuition, practice looking through people and looking through things. What did I say? Practice looking through people and looking through things. I want to repeat again, because it'll save people heartbreak. It is also a characteristic of females that they love admiration and flattery, and they'll fall for it even when they know that it is a lie. You got to watch. We say also that a woman loves to be remembered on special days and occasions. But here is one step further. When you're dealing with a woman, not only on special days and occasions, birthdays and anniversaries and so on, but make special days and occasions. That's a key. Give a man the power and give the woman
the flower.
The flower. Give a man the power, make him believe that you believe that he can do it. Now, here's something very important. This is for the women, particularly in dealing with husbands and sons and other male members of the family and other males that they may have relationships with, and even you women who are in supervisory positions. This is for you, and you have to be careful about this, because this will get a man's dander up. Again, I'm going to make the statement. You write it down, then I will explain it. Never emasculate a man. Mothers have to be careful about this with their sons. Horse trainers will tell you that when you are breaking in a colt, a wild horse, when you are breaking in a wild colt, you must break his wild, undisciplined ways, but you must not break his spirit. Amen. And that is a tricky balancing act. Mothers, with your male children, from babyhood up, always respect the man in him. I'm teaching you things that you never learn in any school. I'm going to throw out a question to the mother of every son, whether that son be 10 minutes old, 10 years old, for as long as that son lives with you. Do you respect the man in your son? And it not only goes for mothers, even fathers must respect the man in the son, particularly as he comes of age. I find myself with Xavier, now that he's 21. Every once in a while, I stop at a certain point and respect the man in him. Why don't you cut some of that hair off? From there on, he doesn't want to do it. And from there on, he and I could go into a real showdown. But just at that point, Spirit reminds me, he's 21 now. If the worst thing about him that you don't like is the length of his hair, how blessed you are. You don't have to wonder where he is or who he's with or what he's doing. And so at that point, I just step back and respect the man in him. Going back to the mothers and their sons, if you break the spirit of the male, this is what makes for a sissified man, a weak man, a lethargic man. And women, it's men too. You not only can break the male spirit by being too bossy or by not respecting it as such, but you can do it by catering to them too much in the wrong way. Don't support them too long. What did I say? Don't support them too long. If they're going to stay in the house with you, fine, but have a definite understanding. Now you are a man, and you are going to bring some money in here to help pay the rent and the food. Have some kind of arrangement. It may be different from family to family. But always put that male in a position so that he is always at the point of his development in a man's position. My mother would say to me every once in a while, "Mama's little man." As soon as I could get out and get a job, I wouldn't got it. It was only a dollar on Fridays, as I've told you about before. For scrubbing and cleaning this lady's house from the front steps down the back steps and washing every dish she ever had used that week. So when I came home with that dollar and some things that Mama had told me to bring with that dollar, you see, we had it established how much of that dollar I was going to bring home to Mama. And I had better not show up at home. A mama's little man was going to get something on his little can. So all along, you see, in the stage of developing, my manhood was recognized. And this is what you've got to do with your male children. Because if you don't do that, and you give them too much, and you let them be irresponsible, that is the worst thing that you can do. That robs them of their manhood. This emasculates a man. Again, when you threaten a man's power, you're threatening to emasculate him. A man loves power, and a woman respects power. I'm going into something extreme now. You ready for this? A woman despises a weak man. Even if he lets her henpeck him, she despises him for it. Even that bigoted woman that you talk about, that henpecks her husband. How many of you have ever seen these women that henpeck their husband? Talk to them any kind of way, anywhere. Yes, dear. Fellows, a woman despises a weak man. So don't think you can please a woman by being weak and watery. And do you know why a woman continues to henpeck and boss around a man like that? She is really showing her hatred for him, her scorn. See, way down in her subconscious, what she's really trying to do is to goad him into asserting himself. Another secret of female psychology. A woman really wants to be possessed by a man, but she wants that to be the kind of man that she can respect and that will be her provider and her protector, you see. And I'll have to tell you something else that my mama often told me about a man, too. So, you know, when I say that a woman should respect a man, that doesn't mean that somebody can down in the gutter being nothing, doing nothing, and having nothing. I mean, that's not even being a man. My mother used to say to me, "Son, a man is more than breath and breeches." But a woman despises a weak man. And I advise a man not to mistreat a woman. Don't do that. But the man and the woman are to respect each other as exoteric genders, or gender, as well as the man and the woman, the conscious and the subconscious within the person should be harmoniously united. That's marriage. So that each respects the other. Each does the part that it should do in divine order. Are there any questions about anything that I said about male and female psychology? Do you think you've got a better understanding? Yes. Lady over here. To women not getting along? All right, I'm glad you mentioned that. Let's start basic to begin with. The male and the female are in every mind. What you have to do is have a respect, first of all, on the person-to-person level. You're goading me into making a statement that I wasn't going to make, but maybe I ought to make it. Maybe. And you have got to learn how to get along with what I call ballsy women. You might as well hear it from the preacher. You hear it outside in the street. How many of you encounter women like that? All right. What you have to do is have respect on a person-to-person basis. Respect that person as a person, and just keep respecting that person as a person, and addressing your relationship to the God in that person. This works with two women. It also works with two men. All right? Anything else? All right. He asked about the example of St. Francis of Assisi, who became gentle and meek. You bring up the aspect of gentleman and lady also. I want to deal with that for a moment. By the way, men, be a gentleman for your own sake. So let all the men say, I'm a gentleman for my own sake. Ladies, be a lady. Why? For your own sake. Ladies, say, I'm a lady for my own sake. All right, this also helps you with the question that you ask. What does that mean? It means that I'm going to be a gentleman, I'm going to be a lady because, first of all, I respect myself. And because I respect myself, I will respect you even though you may not respect yourself. Are you with me? Okay. Now, the saints, and in the case of St. Francis of Assisi, because they lived a contemplative life, they were gentle people. It is a gentleness of the spirit that comes from spirit-filled living. Now, humility, you take humility, for example. The strongest person in the world is the person who understands true humility. Humility and weakness are not the same. You see, the truly humble person is humble because he knows that he's got the power. You see, now you take, for example, now I talked about the ballsy woman. Now I'm going to talk about the biggity man that goes around always stomping his feet. You know what his problem is? He has an inferiority complex, and he's trying to make up for it by being boisterous and biggity. But if a person knows who he is, and he knows that he has the power, he doesn't have to go around stomping his feet. Because he knows who he is. And you see, if you know who you are, you will consciously and subconsciously convey that to other people. And they will respect that. Because frankly, other people will see you as you see yourself. All right? You will find that very early, male sons, especially if their father is not in the home, they become very protective of the mother. So while they are not too old, you will just have to pull them aside and talk to them. And explain to them. However, you have to be careful not to kill their protectiveness of you. You see, there's something that you want to break without breaking the positive side of it. Say, listen, I appreciate the fact that you love me and that you are protective of me. But listen, you are growing up and you're going to go out. I've got my own life to live. It's just like I had a marriage counseling session once years ago here at this church. I won't call any names, with a lady who had two teenage sons here. And she was going to get married again, and I interviewed her and her prospective husband, and they did get married, and I think they're still married. And her sons were not too much in favor of that. And you know what I said to her? I said, listen, Watch it with those kids and with those sons, you know, because any day now they're going to be all out on their own and you'll be sitting in a rocking chair by yourself. And so finally they worked that situation out. So you're going to have to give them to understand you appreciate their protectiveness, but that you are an adult, which you were before they were adults, and that you have your own life to live, and that you are asking God for wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Now, it may be the case, as it is many times, that the point comes when they should not live in the house with you anymore. Together, that decision has to be made. But first of all, you have to come to an understanding with them. All right, that is from the intellectual point of view. You are factually correct. But I want to go back to Gideon in the Bible. We could say that Gideon did not deserve to be called a mighty man of valor. He was shaking in his boots. I'm glad he brought this up because this shows the difference between the intellectual and the mystic. You see, because the mystic knows that there is more to a situation than just the cold facts. And we can control the factual side of life from the mystic side of life or from the esoteric side of life. From the esoteric side of life, we can control and change the exoteric side of life. And you see, the angel of the Lord, inner tuition, knows that if I call this fearful man a mighty man of valor, he will become that. The great woman knows that. And that's why she calls her husband that. All right? That's all I'm going to have time to do in this session.